and labor, and which ones are we going to work on?
We carry this one over, and this one's...
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2624.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2624 defines economically distressed worker training and eligible economically distressed workers for purposes of unemployment insurance benefits. We had a first public hearing on February 27th and a work session on April 20th. You have in front of you, committee members, a -3 amendment. The bill replaces the provisions of the measure but maintains the intent. The primary aspect of the amendment moves the contents of the bill from the displaced worker program, which is where the original bill has a language located, to a new area in ORS Chapter 657. There's a sunset clause of January 2nd, 2012 on the measure and an emergency clause effective the 91st day after signing die of the 2009 Legislative Assembly. Mr. Chair, there is a fiscal statement on the measure, and we have clearance from the Speaker to move the bill to Ways and Means.
Thank you, members. This has been vetted in the sub up here, vetted, sent back, vetted again, and I think it's been worked fairly well, I think very well, very completely and thoroughly, and I would entertain a motion to send it to Ways and Means with it as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Have we already adopted the amendment, Mr. Chair?
No, we have.
No. Excuse me. Yes, we do need to adopt the dash
three
amendments. So I represent.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the -3 amendments in House Bill 2624.
Representative Barton moves House -3 amendments in House Bill 2624. Is there any discussion?
It has a $20 million fiscal.
We're moving it to Ways and Means, Representative.
Okay, got you.
Representative Barton's moved the -3 amendments into House Bill 2624.
Going to Ways and Means.
Distressed worker training. It's going to Ways. We're moving it to Ways and Means. Right now, we're moving the -3 into the bill. And I've just opened up discussion on the motion.
Thank you.
Is there any discussion?
I'm not sure.
Representative, we are in a work session, House Bill 2624. Okay. Representative Barton has moved the -3 amendments and into the bill, and we are eventually going to move the bill, assuming votes, to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Is there any opposition to the representative?
I have one thing to state. This has a $20 million fiscal. I will vote yes to move it to Ways and Means. But I want you to know I reserve the right to maybe take a stand against this on the House floor, depending upon what the budgetary situation is.
Representative, no vote in here will ever remove your right to do anything in this building. But I appreciate your concern. I think your concern will be shared by many. Any other further discussion? I think the bill has merit, especially in these times. Any further discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? All right, so moved. Representative?
Mr. Chair, I will move House Bill 2624 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 2624 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Representative.
Just a question of clarification. Perhaps Teresa might know the answer, but when we had heard this bill, they also kind of had informed us at the same time of Senate Bill 461. And are you aware of where that bill's at? And I'd like to keep an eye on that because I personally feel I'm strongly in favor of House Bill 2624 as opposed to the Senate Bill 461. I wouldn't want to have confusion and lose the bills.
Understandable. Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, currently the bill is still in the Commerce and Workforce Development Committee and is not scheduled for a hearing.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion or questions? Any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2624, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3140.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3140 eliminates the waiting week requirement for eligibility for unemployment insurance benefits. The measure sunsets for weeks ending after May 30, 2010. There's an emergency clause effective upon passage. You have in front of you a -1 amendment which replaces the measure altogether. The amendment extends the maximum amount of weeks in which a qualified worker can receive work share benefits from 26 to 52 weeks, and there's an emergency clause effective upon passage.
And we are amending this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And we were just gutting and inspecting the bill.
Yes.
Is that correct? And we have Tom Byerly from the Employment Department come up here and discuss it with us.
Amendment.
Do we have the fiscal amendment?
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair.
And folks, we have all the paperwork.
Yes, we do.
We have the amendment all the fiscal and revenue, and I would, if so, if the committee feels like it's worthy, I would like to move this bill out tonight, too. Go ahead, Mr. Barley.
3140.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm member of the committee, Tom Barley, Administrator for the Unemployment Insurance Division of the Employment Department. Mr. Chair, I was here to testify on the Dash 1 amendments. Is that okay?
That's exactly why you're here, sir.
Thank you. The Dash 1 amendments of House Bill 3140 is intended to increase the number of weeks of benefits payable under the program we refer to as WorkShare. Current law, we want to move it to 52 weeks. Current law doesn't allow more than 26 weeks. Federal law says we can go up to 52. The WorkShare program is a program that would allow a business to reduce their employees' work week by either 20%, essentially one day, or 40%, which would be 2 days. They could work the rest of the week, still maintain their health benefits, still maintain the operation of their employer, and based on the reduction of their work week, they would get either a 20% unemployment benefit check or a 40% benefit check, and that percentage is on the weekly benefit amount. So, let's say it was $3,300, it's roughly around $84 a week the worker would get, in addition to his three or 4 days' worth of work. So it's been a really good program because employers, again, are able to stay open. They don't have to fully lay people off, which saves on the trust fund because 20% of a week on the benefits versus 100% is a huge savings. And the workers get to stay sharp, keep their skills sharp. They don't feel like they need to leave and look for other jobs. And again, a real plus is they have to maintain their health benefits under the law. And that prevents people from going out and looking for other health benefits. Anyway, that's the concept in a nutshell. I'll be happy to take questions.
Any questions of Mr. Byerly? Representative Holden and Representative Kennemer, please.
Thank you, Mr. Byerly. I'm curious, in a scenario where a worker is having their work week reduced and, say, for example, they can't make ends meet with that reduction, and they decide they need to do something else and find another job, would they be eligible for full unemployment benefits if they refuse to take that reduction?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, that's a really good question. And in general terms, probably not, because that work is continuing. And to leave a job, especially in these economic times, we really want to look at how much they're really losing and how they couldn't afford it. But it would be pretty fact-intensive. I'd hate to say, yeah, they would or no, they wouldn't, but we'd have to look at each case individually. I don't know how many times that's happened.
Follow-up. Well, my concern is a 40% reduction is a pretty serious reduction in the amount of take-home that you would have in a particular given week, and you'd be forcing a worker into a position where they could get upside down in their mortgage and not be able to put food on the table, and yet if they can't make ends meet and they need to find something else to do, they're not going to be eligible for full unemployment benefits to enable them that time. I like the concept for workers that want to go down that path. It's a good idea, but I'm worried that forcing workers into that position may not necessarily be the greatest thing in the world.
Well, again, you make very good points, Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey. We would have to look at the reduction, because even though they're getting their work week reduced, they are getting some benefits on top of that as well. And if they still, if the work is still unsuitable based on that reduction, then we would have to look at giving them a full claim. The intent, obviously, is so they don't go on to a full claim.
Representative, follow-up. Just a little troubled, Mr. Chair, by this concept. Without knowing the details of how that would play out for a particular worker, granted they would have some partial benefits, but they're also losing 40% of their paycheck. And, you know, some people live on a pretty tight margin on their budget, and then all of a sudden you're putting them in a situation where they can't survive at that current job at a 40% reduced rate, even with the unemployment benefit, partial unemployment benefit they may be getting. they're kind of stuck, you know, forced into a situation where they, you know, may have to find another job and wouldn't be entitled to unemployment benefits while they're looking for that new job.
I share your concern, actually, and I didn't look at it that way until tonight when you asked the question. That being said, I'd rather have a reduced benefit and reduced workload than worse than no work at all and just my unemployment benefit. And I think that's the intent here, because if you're reduced 80% plus 20% unemployment benefit, you're going to be making more money than if you got 100% unemployment benefit and no work at all.
I'd like to see those numbers, Mr. Chair, to make sure that's
no. It's a very good question,
Mr. Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey. We can run some different scenarios, and again, it would depend on the person's salary. Obviously, a minimum wage salary person who takes a 2-day cut is going to really be hurting. Most of our claimants that are on this program are eligible for over $300 a week on their unemployment claim, so that means they have pretty substantial earnings. And 3 days of work in those cases are going to be far exceed a regular full unemployment benefit check. We could run some scenarios and run them back through.
And we don't have to work this bill tonight either. Representative Kennemer.
I just noted it sunsets in a little over a year. All right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kennemer, this bill would not sunset. The original one would have.
I see, not this one, huh?
Dash ones do not have a sunset.
For all intents and purposes, we're having a hearing on the amendment, not on the bill.
Is there any intent to put a sunset on this provision?
It was not the intention of the department and the drafter of the bill, the amendment. I'm open to any suggestions. That's why we have a public hearing.
But just let me finish up and then
you do it.
And it just seems like, you know, we are, you know, unemployment number one in the United States. So it's a crisis. On the other hand, you know, I worry about long-term impact and need, you know, I like the idea of a sunset. It can always be extended by the next legislature, and I'd like to see a sunset on it.
Representative, I have no problem with that.
Thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm Joe Schmuckacoli, the local welder.
I haven't heard from Joe this session yet, Representative.
Well, I just appeared again. So I'm cut down to 3 days a week, but I'm eligible for 40% benefit. Is that what you're telling me?
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, that's correct.
So in the way we used to do it, I could get curtailed to 3 days a week, and I'd be out of luck. I'd get 3 days a week, period.
That is correct.
Because you have no benefit, I believe, if you have 60% or more.
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, normally, with 3 days of work, you'd be making over your weekly benefit amount. That's correct.
Okay.
So now, you would receive no benefits.
Then, so this is actually, and our concern was, we're putting someone in a position of where they may not be able to make it, but you do have, or look for another job, but you do have 2 days in that week that you would anyway to look for work. So this is actually, to me, it's a benefit to the individual that's off 2 days a week. Am I right?
That's one way to look at it. Yes, sir.
That's the way I saw it. But, Representative Holvey, did you want more questions? And members, we don't have to work this tonight.
No, I'm relatively comfortable with the bill, Mr. Chair, but I do have a few concerns about that, because I know there are scenarios where you can get not just a reduction in work week, but also a reduction in salary, and at some point that those reductions will add up to qualify you for unemployment benefits, even though you are being offered a part-time job. And so, and where this bill intersects with that situation is really where my concern is. Yeah, and so, you know, I just want to make sure that we're not forcing workers into a position where, you know, they're going to be forced into an upside-down position with reduction in wages and a reduction in the work week at the same time. So that's just my concern. I'm not saying it's possible, but I'd like to see some numbers to make me feel a little more comfortable with that scenario.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, your concerns are well-founded, and I don't want to sound argumentative, but one of the things that is still in the law with work share is, number one, the employer has to maintain their health benefits with a reduction, like a full-time worker. Number two, if there's a bargaining unit involved, It has to be signed off on by the bargaining unit. So in practice, in theory, we haven't run into a problem where someone is thinking they're going to get more money on unemployment insurance and want to leave the job. Okay. I'm not saying it can't happen. I would never say that to you, but that's not been our experience.
Good. Any further questions, Mr. Byerly?
No.
All right. Members, do... I'm going to call J.L. Wilson to speak first. Mr. Byerly, you stay there, though,
yes,
just
sir.
In case. Got your little girl with you tonight?
Yep.
That's great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, J.L. Wilson, AOI does support 3140 in the amended form. I will say this, though, we are getting fatigued as it relates to trust fund expenditures, and I think this may be the last one we're okay with. 462 is fine. 2624 with a sunset's fine. This bill in its amended form is okay, too. Our employers do tend to utilize this program. I get a number of inquiries on it. It does seem to be one that helps, and so we're okay with it. But we're approaching that point where we might hit the end of the road.
Mr. Wilson, I can appreciate where you're at.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. There was an important fact I wanted to throw in. A year ago, we had a little under 50 employers using this plan. As of today, we have 477 employers utilizing this program. So business is booming.
Representative Kennemer.
Thank you. JL, what do you think about the notion of putting a sunset on this?
Thank you.
It just seems to me that, you know, our situation, and I have concern about that trust fund.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you know, the whole purpose of this is to take care of people during tough times. And I just need your opinion about whether you think that's relevant and needed.
Yeah, we would not object to a sunset. In fact, I think the rationale is probably similar to what was employed with the previous bill, that these are measures that you take in times like this that could be helpful. But the total overall fiscal cost doesn't give us heartburn, even if it was longer term.
Sure. Members, I would like to move this bill tonight. And I would like to, I would personally go over to the Senate and ask them to put a sunset on it myself, and I would ask all of you to do the same. And we can revisit it, and whoever's here in 2 years can revisit it. I think it's a prudent request.
I'd be fine with that.
Okay, very good. With that, will you get Representative Litt for me, please? Everyone, the hour's late, the session's waning on. Waxing on?
Waxing,
it's moving
and
on.
Waning.
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3140, dash one amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash ones into House Bill 3140.
Representative Barton moves the dash one amendments into House Bill 3140. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I will move House Bill 3140 as amended. It goes directly to the floor.
Yes.
To the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 3140 to the floor, as amended to the floor, due pass recommendation. I just wanted to make this clear. I share Representative Kennemer's concern. I think it's a prudent request, and I will personally, and I want my colleagues here to go over and share with this and put a sunset on it. And we'll see how it looks. I appreciate the business side of the world's concern about this fund, and I think that's a fair request, and I think we should ask them to put that on there. And then I would be happy to concur as it comes back. Any further discussion? Representative Holden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I intend on supporting this bill, but I do want to follow up with a scenario that does happen from time to time that could put an individual employee that in a pretty bad spot, and I am reluctant to see that happen and have that employee be forced into that sort of a scenario. Notwithstanding the comments from the Employment Department, I'm sure I can be assured that that may not happen, but I want to see some numbers, and I'll follow up with the Employment Department.
Please share that with all of us. And Representative, I appreciate if you shared that concern on the floor when we hear the bill. And I would ask the department to follow, see if that happens, because we don't want that happen. We definitely don't want that happen. Any further discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition? All right, then. So moved. Would someone like to volunteer to carry this bill? Representative Escobar.
I'll carry the
bill.
Thank
you very much. All right. Thank you, Mr. Byerly. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3304.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3304 provides for an ad hoc increase in retirement allowance for certain retired members of the public employees' retirement system. The measure also specifies that the increase is to be based on years of service and determinations by the Public Employees Retirement Board relating to the funding of liabilities of the system, and allows payment of increased allowances from the reserve accounts in the Public Employees Retirement Fund. You have in front of you, members, a -2 amendment which clarifies the intent of the measure and establishes that the ad hoc increase is triggered when the board determines that the state employer contribution rate is less than specified percentages. There are actually, in the -2, there is an incorrect, it needs changes because the years of reference are not included. So you do have in front of you a hand engrossed amendment from me, which incorporates the -2 amendment and the redundancy years of applicability.
Okay. We are, for obvious reasons, going to have another public hearing on this bill.
-2, yes.
So people will get another opportunity to speak to it. So let's be brief, concise, to the point tonight, because I have forced my members here tonight, and I don't want to keep them here, and our most able staff here. I don't want to keep them any longer than we have to. David Reinhart, Kathy Beaufay, I'm not sure if I got that, and Bob Olson, please.
Mm-hmm. Whoever wants to start off.
Good evening, Chair Schaffler and members of the Business and Labor Committee. For the record, I'm Dave Reinhardt with Public Affairs Council, representing Oregon Public Retirees Incorporated. With me here tonight is Kathleen Buffet, OPRI President, who's here to talk about the need for House Bill 3304 from the perspective of PERS retirees in general and long-retired and long-serving PERS retirees in particular. Before that, I'd just like to lay out a little bit of what we've attempted to do in House Bill 3304 and why. It is a complicated piece of business. Legislative Council tells us that, and we're the first to acknowledge that it's complicated. But it's complicated, I think, because what we wanted to do is establish a mechanism that wouldn't stress the PERS system at this time, but would provide future relief for PERS retirees, particularly those who have served longest or been retired the longest, from having their pensions eaten away over time by inflation. House Bill 3304 provides for an ad hoc cost of living increase adjustment, or a COLA, to make up the difference between the automatic COLAs retirees have received and the actual changes in the cost of living over time. PERS gives a 2% automatic COLA, and these simply don't keep up with inflation. And past legislatures have approved ad hoc COLA increases in the past. The last one was in 1989. Here's one measure, and there are many measures, of the problem that these ad hoc COLA increases attempt to address. The purchasing power of PERS participants who retired in 1989 is 80.1% of what it was upon retirement. Now, obviously, this is no time to require the PERS fund an ad hoc COLA increase. We understand that, and HB 3304 doesn't do that. The ad hoc increase in HB 3304 would only happen in the future after PERS recovers from today's financial downturn, and only when PERS employer rates, indicators of the system's overall health, fall below a certain level. We created a series of triggers and triggering mechanisms to safeguard the financial health of PERS while getting relief to those most deserving retirees. I can lay out how this would get to the most deserving retirees, the oldest, the ones who have served in the system the longest. But suffice it to say, in the interest of time, that is triggered by making yearly categorizing of the retirees and the years they retired, and matching it to the triggering mechanism, which would be the employer rate. And as it reached a certain, as it came down and reached a certain point, a certain group of retirees would receive their ad hoc increase. After this series of ad hoc COLA increases, the every 5 years thereafter, an ad hoc COLA increase would go into effect for that group. Again, we know that the triggering mechanism and the tiered system are complicated. We appreciate your hearing us tonight on this issue, on an issue that I think is only going to get worse since we're on the cusp of probably an inflationary time, according to many economists. We also appreciate the work of Chair Schauffler's staff and the Legislative Council's Dave Hendricks on this issue. We're open to amendments. We're willing to work with PERS to ease this this future increase through the system. And with that, and your permission, Chair Schauffler, I will turn to Kathleen Buffet.
And Ms. Buffet, before you move on, before you speak, I believe it's the first time Mr. Reinhardt has been before this committee. And in light of some of his past, well, scribblings, I'm rather surprised and pleasantly surprised that you're here and so concerned about the health and welfare of public employee retirees.
Thank
I'm
you.
Glad to see you've seen the light, come around to the force,
here, here.
The dark side.
That was
here,
a
here.
Different Dave Reinhardt, and I don't know where that
Thank
guy
you.
Has gone to.
Forgive me, Ms. Buffet, please. We'd like to hear from you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Kathleen Buffet. I'm the board chairman of Oregon PERS Retirees, Inc., and for many years I was an employee of the Legislative Assembly, and I was greeted in the outer hall by a number of people whose expression on their face was, my gosh, she's still alive.
And what was your position, Kathleen? Come on, fess up.
With the Legislative Council's
yeah.
office.
Ms. Buffet.
Yeah, she ran Legislative Council for many years. I don't have a good enough memory to know how many, but it was an amazing run.
Just so you know, before I met Mr. Reinhardt, one would say he's lucky he's still alive. He's a wonderful man.
Especially after hearing
just
some of the...
Just hazing him and picking on him. And I'm a forgiving human being, so... Go ahead, ma'am.
If we were to work very hard to determine a time to bring an issue like this before the Legislative Assembly, I think you'll have to agree this wasn't the day, or the week, or the month, or probably the year. But we do believe that a periodic review of the purchasing power, the declining purchasing power of retirees, is something worth looking at. We also believe that it should be dependent on the fiscal health of the PERS fund. And as you remember, the PERS fund was terribly healthy last January, February, or a year ago, January, February, and has suffered some jaundice since then. The bill is based on fiscal health of the fund. And lastly, on the reasonableness of the employer's contribution. There is nothing in the intent here to cause an immediate or any impact on the employer contribution rate, which I know is a vast concern to local government particularly. And I think other than commending you to consider this as an issue and a mechanism for determining and resolving what we believe is a developing or increasing detriment to retirement, I can urge you to look at it in that respect and not look at it as a an effort to have something happen. Mr. Hendricks, when he drafted it, put an emergency clause on it, and I said to him, Mr. Hendricks, what did you have in mind? And he said, well, that it might happen soon enough to need an emergency clause. And I said, David, have you read the paper lately? So we realize that this is not an issue of immediate action. And that, I think, is all I have to say. If you have any questions, I can try to answer.
Only to say I'm glad to see you here. I did not work here when you were here, and I just wanted to thank you for your 30 years of
of service to the state, and we're going to hear more from the department about this. I think we do have to make sure we take care of our retirees, make sure they have enough to live a quality life that they've earned through their service. So I just want to thank you for your work.
Thank you. It's nice of you to say that.
Mr. Olson, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Bob Olson, I serve on the OPR board with Kathleen. As you have heard, this bill is needed more and more by the longtime retirees, and that's basically why we're here. Their purchasing power has been greatly eroded, and many of our elderly public employees will eventually benefit from something like this, and we hope that happens. We appreciate your attention to this issue.
Any questions of this panel? Senator Colby, please.
Sorry to ask a lot of questions on the night, but I was curious about the qualifications to be eligible for this particular COLA increase. That I think I read in the bill it was 25 years of service or 30 years of service?
It varies, Chair Schaffler, Representative Holby. It varies according to class. And what we were trying to do was get the benefit to those who had served the longest and been retired the longest first, and then move to another category. And so it varies. There are about four categories and tiers that we would get the ad hoc COLA to.
So it doesn't apply to anybody that's eligible for PERS generally. So you start out with the longest, and as it kind of that's that tier system you're talking
yes.
about. It phases in other people.
Yes,
along
and as the
way.
System improves, it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any further questions to this panel? And Ms. Buffet, thank you very much again. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I'm going to call up the next panel. I'm going to do, there's three more people in favor, and then we're going to have the department up. Brian's already up here. Tricia Smith and Mary Botkin. Please.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Brian Weissman, I'm here representing my group of different public sector employees, the Oregon Nurses Association, the Oregon Council of Police Associations, the Oregon State Police Officers Association, the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees, and the Federation of Oregon Parole and Probation Officers, what they said. I'm done. Thanks.
Thank you. I love that testimony.
Professional.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association. I am here also in favor of House Bill 3304, and I am happy to provide you whatever information you'd like from me beyond my support. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mary Botkin with AFSCME Council 75. We represent the public safety people that Brian doesn't represent, and all the rest of the state employees, or a lot of them. And we're here in support as well, and we'd be happy to answer questions now or in the future.
Thank you. Any questions to this panel? Thank you very much, especially for your brevity on this late hour. Now, Mr. Cleary, please come on up and tell us what we're doing here and what we need to check out and things to be concerned about, if anything.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Paul Cleary, Executive Director of PERS. We had provided an informational memo on the bill as we understood it the last time we saw it, and we just saw some new hand-engrossed version of it as well. And certainly, we don't have any argument with the objective of trying to help retirees keep up with inflation. Indeed, the system's got a history of that with one-time adjustments, with automatic cost of living adjustments. And during periods of real high inflation, we did these kind of ad hoc COLA adjustments as well. We currently have an automatic annual COLA cost of living adjustment of 2%. It's capped at 2%. It's the consumer price index, or 2%, whichever is higher. Whenever the CPI exceeds 2%, the retiree gets to bank that excess and apply it in the years when the CPI is less than. So almost all of our retirees always get a 2% adjustment. And the cost, or last year when we did that 2% adjustment, our pension roll increased by about $47 million. Give you kind of an idea of what a 2% COLA is on our current pension roll. the one issue, of course, you always have with cost of living adjustments and with retirement systems in general, you want to pre-fund them. We currently pre-fund this cost, this 2% automatic cost of living adjustment. We don't have any pre-funding for an ad hoc COLA adjustment. That adds an immediate unfunded liability to the system that we haven't collected money for or invested over people's career. And that's one of the bigger concerns that we've always had with ad hoc COLA adjustments. Some of the options, what a lot of systems use is a 13th check, a one-time payment, and Oregon's had experience with that in the past as well. And there you just say, if you're in a surplus situation, you've got some surplus funding available, you take a portion of that, and you cut a 13th check to retirees, and you try to stair-step it so you actually get the most benefit to the people who've been most impacted by inflation. I think, as you heard from the proponents, this is an extremely complicated bill. Certainly deserves detailed analysis, including involving our actuary. I think it'd be a good issue for an interim work group. Would also help us get through this current financial storm, because I can tell you, our board, their policy position on this is now's not the time. Somewhat similar to, I think, the conclusion that the legislature has reached on pay raises for elected officials and so forth. Now's not the time. In recent months, we went from 112% funded to probably at the end of 2008, 80% funded. We're hoping that we're still somewhere in that ballpark. But we'd like to kind of get through this storm and get in some calmer waters and then look at this with the detailed evaluation that it deserves. Thank you.
And Paul, I've made it clear to the proponents of the bill that, one, I think it has merit. Two, it is a horrible time. And three, we do need to continue to examine it and figure out when the time is, if this isn't the time.
Right.
Because I believe Ms. Beaufay, I believe she needs probably and deserves an increase in her for her service. That being said, I take everything you said to heart because... you know what you're talking about. How long would it take to determine how much this is going to cost?
Well, we'd probably want to sit down with proponents and make sure we've got a clear understanding of what these trigger dates are. The one problem we have, Chair Schaffler, is we can tell you what our liabilities are by different years of service, but to go back in and pull out when those people retired is going to take some pretty detailed work on our end just to get that information to our actuary. I can tell you that I've got X amount of liability associated with people who've got 30 years of service, but I can't tell you without some additional work on our end how many people have 30 years of service that retired before 1991. That kind of detail, we just have never had a reason to collect that kind of information. I mean, you know, or to analyze it at that level.
Could you have something by January?
Yeah, we certainly could work over the interim and have something by January. And that would allow us then to use our 2008 valuation as well when we could pull in the 2008 losses. Because I think it's really important. Right now, the only numbers I can really give you are December 31, 2007, and that's kind of like telling you what your house was worth 3 years ago. Doesn't help you today when you're trying to borrow money.
Well, and we cannot determine the fiscal impact on this bill. Unless the proponents say they can, until we can have a fiscal impact statement, I cannot sit here and say we should move the bill. But so that's our challenge unless somebody figures it out before the 28th.
Yeah.
So
I think you heard that no one thinks it's going to trigger in any immediate time frame. So I'm not sure there's a real need to rush with this session. And you know, as you indicated, you've got the opportunity to look at it again in next January.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Cleary? And I would appreciate you if you folks sit down. I mean, you know, next week and start talking about this. So, there you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, members.
Anyone else want to testify on House Bill 3304? All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3304.
I'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2950.
Mr. Chair, committee members, the House Bill 2950 limits either the State Fire Marshal or the local approved authority to one inspection of alteration or construction of a building or structure for compliance with fire and safety code, life safety code, or local fire and safety code. There are proposed amendments, I'm not sure if they're out of LC yet, that will replace the bill. You have in front of you, members, an overview of what the concept would look like, and the first panel of witnesses will go over that
and,
as well.
And folks, it's late in the day. Be brief, concise, to the point. Most of you are professional. I think everybody here knows how this works, so, including Pat, who's been around. Okay, Paul Phillips, Nathan Phillips, Joe Esmond. Need I lecture you any further, Mr. Phillips?
Which one of us? Two wells or one?
Either one of you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Paul Phillips. I represent the IBEW and NECA and a number of other interest groups that are going to testify tonight. Mr. Chair, in the order of brevity, in 2005, you and other members of this committee helped us, the same group, do some streamlining of building codes. In 2007, you helped us with e-permitting. Both of those worked out wonderfully. We took some progressive thinking on the issues, improved the process, and improved the results. This concept that we have in front of you that we would like to talk to you about today is along the same lines. The bill as it was drafted will be in a work group. What we want to talk to you about is setting up an energy efficiency board. For those of you that haven't been around forever, it's worth noting that the Department of Commerce transitioned into DCBS back in the 1990s. There was an energy conservation board in the state of Oregon. The board was discontinued in 1993 because it was thought other boards could deal with it. That was 16 years ago, and many of you will notice this session and last session, there's been a lot of discussion about energy conservation, things that we could do to improve construction, things that we should be doing to bring down the cost of energy related to the cost of construction. If you look back and you read what the Energy Conservation Board was supposed to do, it was operating under ORS 456730. The board advises on building code provisions relating to the use of modern methods, devices, and materials to achieve maximum energy conservation. That's what we'd like to talk about and get done today. Now, Mr. Chair, rather than you have my testimony, we believe there's a lot of good things that will happen on this. What we'd like to do is not necessarily tonight to have amendments, because we don't have amendments from LC, but if the committee, and we'll go back and solicit the committee after hearing the discussion, if they like where we're going, get those drafted up and move it along this session, because there's a lot of bills and a lot of different committees affecting a lot of different agencies, and there's really no reason to wait. You, Mr. Chair, were very good and gracious in pulling a number of the interest groups together and tasking Mr. Long of Building Codes with how do you go about doing this without a fiscal impact. And he's got suggestions on board consolidations and things of that nature. Our interest, the proponents, is really setting up an energy committee so that we can have the advice on building codes so that the next session of the legislature, you have more information to deal with. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Nathan Phillips. And I'll be glad to answer any questions you might
before
have.
Before you move on,
yes, sir.
There's concerns about consolidating boards. Can you just address that and try to explain why some of these concerns can be calmed and eased? And the mission of that board or those boards will still be carried out within another board that would be consolidated into.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great point. The concept is really to create an energy efficiency board within building codes by taking members of existing boards and having them serve on that board as an advisory process that will help really you as you deliberate on building codes issues in the future and these boards. It does not take away the power of the electrical board or the plumbing board or other boards. One of the things we tasked you tasked Mr. Long with, is how do you get this done without a fiscal impact? The only way to do that, therefore, is to consolidate other boards. I'm not obviously, if it was detrimental to those industry groups, they're going to argue that case in front of you. But to get this done, again, I'm sure you might hear tonight, but I have had nobody say to me, setting up this energy conservation or energy efficiency board is a bad idea. It's how do you get from here to there? And I think there are some ways to do it. After you hear the testimony, if you want me to come back and be more specific, I'd be glad to.
Very good. Thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Phillips.
Thank you, Chairman Schaffler, members of the committee. I'll just be very brief. I think that my name is Nathan Phillips, and I'm an electrical contractor in Eugene and also do real estate development down there. And I was a member of the Electrical and Elevator Board for 12 years. And I think that this energy board is a great idea. It's a concept whose time has really come with all the emphasis on energy conservation that we have today and need to have today, getting these issues consolidated into one board where we can get expertise from all the various trades brought to bear will really improve efficiency of the board system and get us a better code in the long run. And I think we'll get better coordination and better communication on the issues and end up with a code where we all understand what the outcomes that we're seeking are. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Esmond.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Schaffler and members of the committee. My name is Joe Esmond. I am a business rep for Local 48 and still electrician. Kind of rusty, but still electrician. I want to speak in support of this bill, this concept. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the
comment. He said shocking.
That you would be rusty, I'm sorry.
Should I gavel him down, Mr.
I got his home address, Chair. One of the reasons I'm very interested in this is I've been doing energy efficiency meetings for umpteen years, it seems like. Spent 3 to 6 months last summer before last, it seemed like. And all these groups, interest groups, stakeholders, whatever the buzzword is this week. I got nervous because everybody wants to be overnight be green, and they wanted to. Some of them wanted to cut corners because some of them, quite frankly, don't understand our industries. So I think this will address a lot of the issues, and I'm looking forward to working with the chair and or the committee any way I can. Is that short enough?
Thanks, Joe. Okay. You're doing good, buddy.
Mr. Chair?
In a moment. You're exactly right. Something has to be done to, you know, where energy and where we get it is changing radically. No one is going to deny that. And we have to be very careful on how we go about implementing all these changes in rules and regulations. And we have to have professionals doing it. And I do not think a bunch of part-time legislators are the ones that should be doing it. Representative Kanemer.
Mr. Phillips, in a previous life, in a previous century, didn't we work on getting rid of the Energy Board?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For those of you that aren't aware of that, Senator Kanemer and I, now Representative Kanemer, Senator Kanemer and I served together in the State Senate in 1993 when the Energy Conservation Board was discontinued.
Why did we do that?
We did that because it was part of the transition between the old Department of Commerce mm-hmm. and the new DCBS and the creation of boards at that particular time. It was under streamlining, and the theory was that the agencies there then could adopt these changes on conservation. Again, if you look at the dynamic that we faced in 93 versus what you're talking about, energy costs and savings and the desires and aspects of going forward, plus the agencies that are being tasked with looking at these variety of things, having one central go-to agency makes some sense.
We have brilliant new leadership in this building. It's fixing a lot of you guys' mistakes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's undeniable. On the other hand, it was the right thing at that time, and I think, you know, it's probably the right thing at this time, because as all of this green technology and thinking proliferates, you know, it's time to get back and coordinate it, because otherwise we're going to lose it in a morass of different agencies and bureaucracies and competing things. I have another bill having to do with residential treatment of mental health patients, and there are seven different agencies that regulate them. It's outrageous, and it doesn't work. And this is an example, maybe early on before this thing gets out of control, to put it back on, and it's time to do it again, I guess.
Thank you. Thank that has merit.
Dave Pruitt, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of clarification. Thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony. And so am I clear now that we are no longer pursuing a single inspection for fire and life safety? We are now off of that concept. This is more about energy efficiency board concepts, moving that bill into this number. Is that correct?
Correct. It's a relating clause issue.
Okay, and I appreciate that. I wanted to verify that. As you know, with my background, I've gotten a lot of emails of concern, and understanding the position you do, and I know you're interested in life safety as well. So thanks for clarifying, and thanks again for your testimony.
And I'm sorry for not making that clear, but you do. And I told the fire marshal's office that if they want to do a home, we weren't going to do anything behind their back tonight. Mr. Esmond, please.
Yes, Chairman Schaffer, Representative Matthews, if you'd like us to do that, we'd be more than happy to help you out.
Any further questions of this panel? Thanks, guys. Terry Hatch and Doug Alljets, please. We'll be hearing from some people with some other opinions, possibly.
This morning?
It's just mine, I think.
My name is Terry Hatch. I represent the National Electrical Contractors Association in Eugene, Oregon. I represent about 400 electrical contractors. Chairman Schaffler, members of the committee, just like to speak in favor of this bill. This would be a really good thing for us down the road. The agencies and the way things operate right now are just a morass. So I'd just like to speak in favor of that.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Representative Schaffler, members of the board, my name is Doug Alljets. I'm with Kaiser Electric. I also represent NECA. I'd like to offer support for this move. Contractors need one place to go for the new energy rules and codes that are going to be established, and having it under BCD would be a good thing.
I think the goal here is to do it as painless as possible.
Absolutely.
Without running over anybody. Any questions of these gentlemen? Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Don Miner and Pat Schwab, please come on up. Sorry to keep you all so late.
Our age doesn't matter. Please do.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Miner. I'm here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association. We don't oppose the creation of an energy board. What we don't support is the elimination of the Manufactured Structures and Parks Advisory Board. That's an advisory board that's existed since about 1975. It oversees the federal program that regulates manufactured housing, the installation of manufactured housing, mobile home parks. It also has a role in overseeing the RV inspection program. That board is comprised of a manufacturer, a retailer, installers, fire marshals, engineers, a couple of consumer groups, and it's the voice, it's the industry's voice into the agency. It's an advisory board. Now, there are 9 factories that operate still in the state, not operating very well at this point, and they'd like to see this board continue. Again, we don't object to the creation of a board. There are 2 existing structures boards. One of those boards, the Building Code Structures Board, 455.132, subsection 2, is already charged with advising the agency on energy conservation issues. It seems like the role of that board could be expanded if you want to do it without creating a fiscal impact. I recognize the legislature's desire to not create a fiscal impact, but from our point of view, the trade-off of eliminating our board or consolidating it into a much larger structures board, where we think its voice would be subsumed in other issues. It wouldn't be a board that was focused on our industry, is not a good idea. And this is a reasonably well-funded agency, so not sure that it couldn't absorb the cost of another board. And with that, I'll conclude my remarks.
Thank you, Tom. Go ahead, Pat. We want to bring the microphone around.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity. For the sake of who is she? I'm Pat Schwack, and I've been with Bolsta Manufactured Homeowners for quite a number of years, way back when Senator Kenmer was a senator. In any event...
Way back.
I think everyone who's working this building knows who you are, Pat.
Oh, I'm sure they do. You don't see a lot of old ladies out wanting to do something for the good of the world. This committee that Don talks about, I've been a member of that for a number of years. And it's done an awful lot of good things for manufactured housing. My husband, who's here in the audience, at one point in time was a vice president of the National Manufactured Homeowners. And he was quite surprised and pleased to learn that Oregon had the very best statutes for manufactured housing in the whole United States. I'd like to see this continue as it is. Manufactured housing is a difficult industry to deal with, I think. At least it seems to be. We're always in here griping about something. But I'd like to see this committee remain as a committee that takes care of the needs that those of us who live in manufactured housing have. And I don't know for sure where they're going with this thing, but I'd like my two bits worth in it. And as my husband said, just say to him, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
It's just a concept. I agree with the intent of the bill. It's a question of how do we do it without causing any pain. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of ways to skin a cat. Hope the Humane Society doesn't come after me after that one. We'll just continue the conversation, examine our options. But I do. Any questions of these good people? Representative Kim.
In that same line, I guess. The mobile home industry has evolved quite a bit, and now manufactured housing and I guess, and I just learned of this concept an hour or so ago, so it's brand new and scary in my mind too. Mm-hmm. And good in lots of, I mean, there's some great ideas here. And I just wondered, you don't have a seat on the residential codes board. There's a residential what's the name of that board? I can't remember the name of that board.
I think it's called the Residential Structure Codes Board.
Maybe there's somebody going to talk about them later. Is there anybody else testifying on this bill about that?
Bill Cross is neutral.
Okay. I just wonder if there's a time to combine and have more clout. And I raise that as a question rather than as a statement.
If I could, Mr. Chair, just a quick response in light of the late hour. Manufactured structures are regulated. Their standards, their energy conservation standards, et cetera, are all established by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Currently, to move that along beyond the code, we work through the Oregon Department of Energy, who work on a consultative basis with the industry. They expose us to new technologies, new products. We've had that relationship since the late 1980s. But the code is not set for manufactured homes, except for the installation, is not set in Oregon. So combining the structures board, is hard to see how that would be of much benefit, other than subsume us, is our concern. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Any further questions? Well, thank you very much. Good to see you, Pat.
Thank
My
you.
Mom's name is Pat.
I see. Patricia. That's how you remember it.
It's easy for me to do. Bill, you want to come up and let us know what you think about all this? And that, Mr. Cross, the last one on the list, if anyone else wants to testify at this time, let me know.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Bill Cross, and I'm really here on behalf of three different groups, the Commercial Building Owners, BOMA, the Oregon Building Officials Association, and another group, the Oregon Mechanical Officials Association, which are part mechanical contractors and part mechanical officials. And I think the energy board or energy efficiency code board concept is a very good concept, and we're very interested in participating in the development of that board. There hasn't been much time to explore with the proponents, the composition of that board. And what kind of opportunities the different stakeholders would have in the development of that board. But clearly, I think we are sensitive to the needs for a better coordination of the components in our energy code. The other element of this concept is the restructuring of some of the other boards. And when I first took an association management lobbying position, so to speak, with the Oregon building officials, and I'm kind of going, well, how challenging or how, I mean, what are they looking at, code stuff? Well, I found out there are a lot of stakeholders in codes and code administration and code issues, everything from the manufacturers to the building designers to the inspectors to all the tradespeople and the contractors. Anyway, it's just a very complex, and so my reservation on behalf of my clients is simply they're, again, having an opportunity to participate in sort of this reconfiguration of the boards, and that in and of itself may not be a bad approach, but ensuring then that the various stakeholders that do have a need to be or a need to participate and be at the table are indeed left standing after a bill gets drafted. So that's the comments we'd like to offer. Any questions?
Any questions of Mr. Brass? All right. Well, Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I appreciate that Mr. Cross seems to be neutral. You know, I really like this concept of an energy board. I really think that the time has come a long time ago to examine our energy issues within buildings, because it touches on a lot of different crafts and trades. But the one thing that caught my eye in this whole concept, I guess, was the combination of the mechanical and the structural boards. You know, I was trying to figure out the synergies between different groups, and I kept thinking of plumbers and mechanical. You know, we have a lot of companies that do both of those together, and I was just trying to figure out. So I'm curious about your take on the mechanical part of that being combined with the structures board instead of the plumbing board or some other board.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby. Now, understand, I just shared this concept with a couple of the board members of OMOA the other day, earlier today, I should say. I think they are anxious about what kind of voice they would have on a combined board. The structures board is a very large board right now, at least in terms of numbers, and a lot of players that participate in that. As we move into energy codes and some of the other mechanical issues, ASHRAE and HVAC are wonderful opportunities to reduce our energy use. And I think there's again just a concern as to ensuring that the mechanical industry and voice is heard, and that we do have a say in the development of these codes. Our association would be more comfortable if there is going to be a consolidation of boards with structural, because there is a lot of commonality. As you point out, though, there are a number of contractors that are plumbing and heating contractors, but the plumbing code is probably more distinct from mechanical structural.
And Representative, your point's well taken. There's people sitting in the audience and people out that aren't here sitting waiting, listening patiently, that would definitely have to be in any conversation that we do if we choose to put some hard language together and make any changes. And so this conversation will have to be a lot broader, to be quite frank with you, if we move forward with this. Any further questions of Mr. Cross? Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Long, would you like to briefly come up here and briefly and pointedly and concisely shed some light on this?
Sure. Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mark Long, I'm Administrator of State Building Codes. I'll be very brief and talk about the concept overall. It's an interesting concept. Obviously, it demonstrates a commitment to the issue, and I think that that's important, especially in what we're looking at today. It gets folks together that have the expertise and the experience in these other boards into one place to talk about these issues, which I think is really good and gets the crafts working together. Frankly, it positions Oregon to be a leader in these issues. I serve on another board that deals with stimulus money, and this is very useful for trying to consolidate those issues altogether. And I think the best way to, I've been talking to folks that it's a kind of a one-stop idea to where you can take issues that can cross over multiple crafts, get them into one place, and if there's consensus, if there's a supermajority, you can get them moved out in an expedited manner. And I think it's the best to be said that it's like a consensus-based expedited process. As far as the mechanics of what we've talked about in the last week, I want to make sure folks understand, no change to any of the board's authority, responsibility. Nobody's losing anything. Okay, you got to be very clear on that. For the areas that we have licensing and those kinds of licensing regulations, doesn't touch any of that. The existing boards operate. You've heard comments about the merging or the blending of different boards and whether there's synergies there or not. Yes, maybe no. Just to get at the kind of the manufactured housing issues, there's four or five folks that in the 12-member board that are related to those issues, those other interests, and I'm sure we can accommodate that in the residential board if the chair is interested in looking at this issue and making sure that there's no changes there. Other than that, I'd be happy to take any questions, Mr. Chair. Just trying, trying to be brief.
Any very good. Excellent testimony. Any questions, Mr. Long? Thank you, sir.
All right.
Anyone else want to testify tonight? Once again, we will have another public hearing if any of this moves forward for everybody to get a chance to talk about what it is we do. If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2950 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2954.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2954 dissolves the Construction Contractors Board and transfers its powers, duties, and authorities to the Department of Consumer and Business Services.
Another concept that's drawn great interest. Paul Phillips, Nathan Phillips, and Joe Esmond. Again, please, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Paul Phillips. I represent NECA, Building Trades, IBEW, both 280 and 48. Mr. Chair, this, unlike the previous issue that can move this session, this is an issue that we're bringing to you because it really needs some gelling and some thinking, but it needs, in our opinion, to happen. I represent a lot of contractors and most of the trades, and consolidation, streamlining makes sense to us. Having one agency that we go for licensing and everything else makes sense to us. It also makes sense from a consumer protection standpoint because some of the things that I did do that are still in law when I was a senator was really focused on consumer protection, but I'm sure you're aware of that.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chair. But it really, here's the issue. If you go back in law to 1971 and look at the Builders Board and the Construction Contractors Board, and then you move forward to 1973 with the Building Codes Administrator and the Building Codes Division, focus then on 1987 when the Department of Commerce and Department of Insurance were finance were put together. Then you fast forward to 89 and you look at how these are all working together. You have a Construction Contractors Board now, and then by rule you have the Building Codes Divisions there. From a business services one-stop shopping standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. Now, I will agree with everybody that doing this during an economic depression and consolidating and when the markets are down and everything is a very difficult lift. However, it doesn't mean that the concept is a bad one. And it means very specifically that if we can streamline, if we can make one-stop shopping really work and we can provide consumer protection and we can do things for the licensed crafts as well as other contractor groups, that all makes sense.
I just don't want to try and overreach on what we can do this session. We wanted to entertain this thought with you today, perhaps look at it, whether it should be a standalone agency or wrapped into Building Codes Division. That's a policy decision for you guys. Our real focus, my personal focus, is having a construction agency coming out of the next legislative session that can really move the ball forward. So that's really what we're looking at. That's about as brief as I can do on four pages, so I'll turn it over to Nathan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Nathan Phillips, and I'm from Eugene. We've been talking for a long time about ways to improve efficiency in building codes administration and consolidating agencies. We currently have multiple agencies as contractors and craftsmen that we have to deal with to get permits to build buildings. And this bill would increase efficiency by reducing redundancy and simplifying the process. And the comments that Representative Kenmer made of when we were talking about the Energy Board are really relevant to this as well, that we have multiple agencies that we have to deal with anytime we go to build something. We've got CCB, we've got BCD, we've got fire and life safety, we've got land use, we've got health, it just goes on and on and on. And the more we can move these things into one place, the more efficiently we can operate, and the lower the cost is, and the better the services are. So this would conserve scarce resources by eliminating wasteful duplication of services. And we think it's an idea that really should be considered.
Again, Joe Lesman with the IBW 48, and I'm speaking for 48 and local 280 here in the Valley. I'll be very short. This may be shocking. I won't amp up. I support these concepts and bills. So, and I apologize to the fair representative from Gresham if I insulted him or fellow fighter. I used to work for the Fire Bureau, so I take a little license.
You're a good friend, Joe. You're okay. Don't you worry about it.
Yeah, and once again, it's people hate change, and people are afraid of change, and I am too. I'm no different than anyone else, and I think it's overcoming that fear and showing people that this can be better and more workable, whatever it is. I'm talking in general here, and I think people just need to be calmed and pointed and brought along in the process, just like that's what we're doing here every day.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's why I gave you the historical perspective. If you look at all the changes and then look at the construction market today, things always change. Yeah. So how do we do it that everybody gets along? And this is going to take a lot of bridge building.
Right. Yes, sir. Which I want to do a lot of that, too.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys. It looks like we're good.
Thank you.
Once again, Mr. Hatch, Mr. Alljets, and Mr. Shipwreck, please.
Where's he come? What he wants to do.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Doug Alljets. I'm with Kaiser Electric, representing NECA. To be brief and not repeat what's already been said, just to add that BCD is already well suited to oversee the current responsibilities of CCB. And also, my company is licensed in multiple states, and Oregon, although I love Oregon, is the only state that has two separate agencies for technical licensing and business licensing. Thank you.
Chairman Schaffler, members of the committee, I just wanted to talk briefly about the licensing requirements and the consumer protection. And
your name, sir. Forgive me.
Oh, excuse me.
Okay.
I'm Terry Hatch. I represent NECA. We're real familiar with the enforcement section, and both of the agencies have current enforcement powers. Oftentimes, when there's a problem out on a job site or with an unlicensed worker performing work, electrical work, which could be dangerous or not dangerous, but mostly dangerous, and there's a discovery of that, it has to go through two separate agencies, the part for the licensing and then the part for the contractors board, and it just creates a bunch of redundancy that is unnecessary. We'd like to have you consider this bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Bob Shiprock, Oregon Building Trades Council, also lending support to this bill. Just two comments that haven't been mentioned. I think there's an economy of scale that would be gained here. The Department of Consumer and Business Services has extensive computer technology, information management, things that would help that perhaps would be duplicated today. And secondly, I've long felt that this is a standalone agency that needs a home.
Thank you. And Mr. Aljetz, you or Mr. Phillips, if you can get us, I would be interested in those other states, their models of how they do this. I'd be very interested in looking at that. Whenever you chance. Any questions, these gentlemen? All right, thanks, guys. Craig Smith, Scott Berry, Don Miner. Those are the only folks on the list here. Whoever wants to go first, guys.
Members of the committee and Chair Schaffler, my name is Craig Smith. I'm the administrator of the Construction Contractors Board. And I've been with the board now for quite some time. And I can tell you that the history of the board is just as you heard from previous testimony. It's a long and proud testimony or history. I can also tell you that of the 50 states, there are probably 50 different ways that construction is regulated. In some states, there's a home builder's board. In some states have plumbing and other types of boards. This state has gone down a path, and as I think Chair Schaffler indicated, there's a lot of ways to skin the cat. And clear message here is that there is change should not be avoided. Change should always be embraced. One constant is change, and we need to keep that in mind. Whether or not this is the right way to go, of course, is going to be your decision ultimately. The Construction Contractors Board is neutral on this bill, and we, of course, recognize that the creation of both the Builders Board and the almost every other agency is a product of this body. It's this body's privilege to shuffle the deck the way they see fit. And, of course, we are your partner in exercising your will. So with that, I stand ready to answer any questions.
Let's go first, guys.
I can be brief. Don Miner for our Manufactured Housing Association. Our industry is regulated by the Construction Contractors Board, at least our retailers and installers, transporters, et cetera. It's been a very good agency for us for a lot of years. It's a good place to efficiently and inexpensively for consumers to go to resolve disputes. We like that. I guess our concern with consolidating it into DCBS is it would add another layer of overhead and make it somewhat more expensive. Or that would be a fear. But again, lots of ways to skin a cat. So yeah, that's your view. So, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Go ahead, Scott.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, Scott Berry with the Oregon Home Builders Association, and I just figured when I saw this bill scheduled that I should run down and correct it, and I wanted to thank the chair for giving me the note to actually move the Building Codes Division over to the Construction Contractors Board and fix this thing properly. There is some interest, I think, from all of us in consolidation, but in terms of the overhead we see at DCBS, we'd much rather have the reverse happen and potentially look at getting outside with one construction agency where we didn't have $5.5 million in overhead going up to DCBS from Building Codes Division, all contractor fees for oversight. So I think as we maybe take a look at this over the next few years, we can find a way to do this. And certainly if we can find a good solution, the home builders would be in favor of sending that $5.5 million to the general fund for some savings for a couple of years, long as after that it ended.
That's
thank
awfully
you.
Generous of you, Mr. Cherry.
I
there are plenty of ways to do things, and this is a much broader conversation than tonight. And I just want to apologize to Mr. Berry, and if his clients are paying attention, I did not think we were going to have this on the schedule, and then we did.
So rarely do I tell someone one thing and then do another, but I just wanted to recognize that on the record in case your bosses are watching. So any questions of these gentlemen? I think it's dinner time. The dinner bell's ringing. Thank you, guys. Anybody else want to testify tonight? All right, with that, I'm going to close Public Hearing House Bill 2954. And anything for the good of the order? We're adjourned.